We're dads on the air. We're here 'cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're back, we're dads on the air. And welcome back to Dads on the Air, this sunny Tuesday, 13 April 2010. And this is Bill Cable from Mediate Now, and in the studio with me, I have Phil York from Dads in Distress.
Good morning, Bill. Good morning, everyone.
And also doing the panel, doing such an excellent job as usual, Ian Purdy from ianpurdy.com.
Good morning, Bill, and good morning, Phil, and good morning, everybody else.
Well, on today's show, we've got some very interesting guests, as usual. Today, we'll be speaking to Ray Escobar and Dr. John Walsh, and this is in connection with a movement in Tasmania called Juries Against Illegal Laws, and there's a class action in Hobart's federal court, which we'll be talking to those gentlemen about to get a bit more information as to what's happening in the Apple Isle. Before that, with Phil in the studio, Dads in Distress had a fundraising activity on Sunday. Phil, perhaps you could tell us a bit more about it and how it went.
Yeah, thanks, Bill. It was a fundraiser for our 1300 number. Dads in Distress operates a free call or a local call service where guys can ring in and not only find out about our groups, but also, more importantly, talk to someone who has been through the separation process and understands where he's at. Last year, we took over 4,400 calls on this line, and the average call lasts 42 minutes. So it's a very vital service that we offer. It is... difficult to keep going on the limited amount of funding that we do get. So we decided to partner with some wonderful people, Networking for Charities, and they help to promote and organise our walk. So last Sunday was the first walk. We plan to do this in the coming years as well. And it's a 20-kilometre walk. For the first year, we had 33 registered walkers. We started, it was at Centennial Park in Sydney with two starting times, 8 a.m. and 10 a.m. And we basically did five laps of the 3.8-kilometre circuit plus a 500-metre back and forth to complete the 20 kilometres.
And then, so 33 starters, and you were lucky with the weather. It was a nice sunny day.
It was an absolutely beautiful day for a walk in the park. There were lots of Sydneysiders out there. Centennial Park is a beautiful park and caters for lots of local Sydney people, and Sunday was just a perfect day for it. As I said, 33 registered walkers. We also ended up getting some other people just coming along for the walk and not registering, but, giving their support that way. And it was a great day. We raised, at the moment, $5,700-odd to go to our 1300 number. And personally, a big thank you to everyone who did donate. And, we can only move forward from here, and it was a great success.
Yeah, look, that's a great effort from you, Phil, in particular, and that's all going to a very worthy cause. So let's hope it's not 33, it's 1,000, and we'll go on from there. But it's a great fundraiser for a lot of people in high levels of distress.
Yeah, that's right. And as I was saying earlier to someone else, the walk took me about 4.5 hours, and it was basically because I was getting stopped along the way and people, supporting us and congratulating us on the work we do. And
did anyone throw anything valuable at you, Phil?
No. Actually, I could give you the scenario of my walk. It was a comical walk, if nothing else. I started off. I did the first lap in my joggers. By the end of that first lap, I'd had two to what's it, blisters on both my feet. So the second lap I did in thongs. Mm. That didn't work out well. So the third lap I did barefoot.
Oh, there we go.
And then the fourth and fifth, I had a jogger on one foot and a thong on the other. So I must have looked a sight. But we did the 20Ks and, you know, had a bit of a barbie after it. And it was great.
And suffering ever since. But anyway, it's good.
Limping but smiling.
Yeah, that's it, mate. That's it. You know, it was really good. It was great to see so many people come out and support us. And as Bill said, you know, we can only grow from there. And with a bit more networking and a bit more promotion, I'm sure, you know, a lot of these people that I spoke to on Sunday will actually come along next year. So looking forward to that.
Great stuff. Well, on another topic, people might be interested in a show, a documentary called Who Needs Fathers? It's on the video page of the Dads on the Air website. So just go to www.dadsontheair.net/who-needs-fathers and you'll be able to look at that that BBC documentary.
Oh, that's the one that we talked about last week that they're starting, that they're they've just recently released.
Yeah, that's
yep.
right.
Yep, so just a reminder on that one. You can go and have a look at that. And now on the other side of the coin, we are expressing a lot of concern about some recent activity by the Child Support Agency, and they're reported as ramping up their use of optical surveillance to ensure that, inverted commas, parents meet their obligations. This was announced by Chris Bowen, who is the Minister for Financial Services, Superannuation and Corporate Law, as well as being the Minister for Human Services, and it's that latter portfolio that encompasses the Child Support Agency. And in his statement, Mr. Bowen said that increasing optical surveillance will enhance the CSA's investigative capabilities and add significant value to its range of collection and litigation options. Parents who don't do the right thing will be caught and will have to face the consequences, including being referred to the Commonwealth Director of Public Prosecutions or relevant state police service for prosecution action in some cases.
Oh, that's going to do really good things to the suicide rate, I'm sure.
Yeah, there was in July 2008, the CSA established a 12-month trial to use covert optical surveillance to support investigations into a limited number of serious cases.
That's private investigators, private detectives. They're hiring using taxpayers' money to basically get private detectives to follow around people who they suspect haven't been paying their child support. Shock, yeah. Horror. Heinous crime that it is.
All increases the cost of getting any recovery when they have to pay all these investigators.
Oh, of course.
So following that evaluation of that trial, the government decided that covert optical surveillance would permanently form part of the CSA.
Oh, they decided it was a good idea.
They decided it was a good idea.
Oh, good on them.
And what people may not be aware of is that I have some very recent personal experience of this, the Child Support Agency, if they decide that you owe them some money, can issue a notice to your bank and drain every cent that's in your bank account. They don't need a government. They don't need a judgment from the court. All they need is a debt entered in their records, and they can come and drain your account.
They can rob you.
Yep. So this is
steal your money.
Great concern in what we regard as a just society. So I think it's only when people find out about these things that they're shocked.
And well, people don't usually find out until it happens to them, yep. By which time they're too late because they haven't got any money to employ a lawyer to do something about it by then because they've been fleeced and they're just sitting around scratching their head completely shell-shocked saying, how could this happen to me?
Yep, well, once the money's gone, it's gone.
It's gone-ski. That's
so,
it.
And then you're fighting the government, which is... is always a bit of...
They're a bit bigger than us, yes.
Bigger than the individual.
Well, speaking of the government, I've actually got here an open letter to parents from the Australian Education Union. They've got a whole page in this morning's Australian. If the federal government won't protect students, teachers will. And they've written an open letter here, or published it. It says, "Dear parents, as teachers, we understand how important assessment and reporting is to you. It's your right to get accurate information on your child's progress and the effectiveness of their school. But We also know the damage that can be done when information on students and schools is misused. When the federal government established the My School website in January, it published information on schools in a way that was both inaccurate and incomplete. Misleading comparisons of school were created that didn't even take into account school funding and resources. Our greatest concern was that newspapers were allowed to take test data from the website and inappropriately rank schools in league tables. No matter how much progress schools had made with their students, the ones with low average results were judged as failures. Being branded in that way hurts students and school communities. It also makes it harder to improve the quality of education in our schools. Then it goes on to say why we must act. There are two reasons. We have repeatedly tried to get the federal government to do two things, it says. Firstly, protect students and school communities from the damage caused by league tables. And secondly, improve the My School website so it provides meaningful and accurate information for parents. Then they go on to say, unfortunately, the government has refused to heed the concerns of the profession. Faced with the choice of doing nothing or protecting students, we have decided to act. Our decision is that we will not deliver the national NAPLAN tests in May unless the government addresses the profession's concerns. No other test, student assessment, or reports will be affected. If the government won't protect students, we will. Sincerely, teachers and principals. What do you think of that lot, team?
Yeah, well, the government's getting into a lot of trouble with the on a number of fronts at the moment, trying to push things through. I mean, the ETS seems to have died. You've got the house insulation, which the leader of the opposition never ceases to remind us about, and now we've got this schools.
Well, we've also got the health system. They're trying to nationalise the health system, trying to put basically take over the state's hospitals and things that the federal government are. So they're going ahead on four fronts, and the education revolution, which they called it. I mean, if you're going to have a revolution, you've got to expect some blood on the floor. You've got to expect some heads to roll. I personally think that the system that the schools have been presenting in terms of testing and reporting students has been very inadequate. I mean, I went for 2 years receiving these reports about my son and how satisfactory his behaviour was and what a good boy he was, only to find out that he could neither write nor read, nor add nor spell nor subtract nor do anything that I thought he went to school to learn. We didn't find out till after 2 years of these worthless reports that what they were reporting was completely worthless. And it seems to me that this is what they're trying to do to the whole system. They're basically trying to, take the sting out of any kind of testing apparatus, because tests are to basically compare results. That's why you test children. That's why you test schools, to compare the results, to find out who is succeeding and who is failing. And the fact that the pupils and the headmasters and teachers are finding that this website which rates schools and the tests by which they do it are unfair to students. I mean, I find all this very sus myself. I think they should just pull their heads in and go with the government's plan. This is a revolution. We needed a revolution in our schools. At least they're attempting to do something, and we should get behind the government. And you know, things surely can't get any worse. And I think that a national standards, which is what we are striving for here, we've just recently released the national literacy standards. They're trying to bring all of the schools up to a national level, which is going to be a little bit painful for schools that are lagging a long way behind, and yes, disadvantaged schools, and they will get a kick up the butt, and it may be painful for them, and there may be some stigma attached to their school in the community because they're not performing. But if it achieves the desired result of getting more students passing more exams and getting a better education in our so-called places of education, then it's got to be a good thing. What do you think?
Well, look, just talking about schools, there was an article in the Sydney Sun Herald on the 11th of April saying that schools are not doing enough to deal with the reality of divorce, according to some new research. And fathers in particular are feeling excluded from activities such as school carnivals, working bees, parent-teacher interviews. Professor Thea Brown from the Department of Social Work at Monash University said it was time for all schools to adjust to the reality that 22% of school children have divorced or separated parents. The research found that in most cases, that non-residential parents, which in most cases means fathers, said they about two thirds of them said they did not receive anything from the school, not even school reports, and so that's part of it. I mean, that if the school's willing to cooperate, that might be addressed by directly approaching the school.
Yeah, you do. I found in that situation, I approached the school and I told them that I required my son's reports and that I required copies of all of the PTA activities and whatever. I wanted to be involved. And they send out two copies and they were very good about it. So if you do inform the school that you are separated and that you are a caring parent and that you want to be involved, they will duplicate.
I get actually mixed messages about that from all the dads that come to our groups, and it really depends on the school.
Yeah.
You know, although there is this school policy that the New South Wales Department of Education has put out and the schools must adhere to, it really comes down to the personal thing within that school and how proactive the principal is and making sure that non-custodial fathers or parents actually receive that information. So as I see it, there needs to be more done to make it uniform and to make it possible for all non-custodial parents to actually get that information.
Well, this seems to be the general thrust of what Labor are trying to do. They're trying to introduce national standards. They're trying to bring in a situation where all schools are basically run on the same principles, which is what we don't have. And from that point of view, if we can get some kind of consistency across the board nationally, surely that's got to be a good thing.
Well, look, it's a big topic. I think we might come back to it because we've got our first guest ready, and we might just have a musical interlude, and then we'll be speaking to Ray Escobar.
He's my boy, the pride and joy. Nothing can compare. We grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
Dad's in Distress, 1300 853 437.
We're back with Dad's on the Air.
Welcome back to Dad's on the Air. That track was called My Boy, and it's from the album Man Agony by Horizon Shine. And this is Bill Cable from Mediate Now, and we have our first guest on the line. It's Ray Escobar, who's calling in from Tasmania. Are you there, Ray?
Yeah, g'day, Bill. How are you, mate?
I'm well, thank you. Ray, we mentioned a little bit earlier about the difficulties of taking on the government, but you've actually started a campaign in Tasmania, and I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about how it arose and what you're doing.
Certainly, Bill. What happened was that in 2004, the infamous Judy Jackson of Tasmania really pushed a law through called the Tasmanian Family Violence Act. And what it included was the actual police taking over the former responsibility of magistrates in court by allowing a policeman to present a police family violence order on somebody without any substantial evidence, and automatically removing the so-called perpetrator from their house, no contact with their children, losing their jobs, their reputation, their chattels, etc., and with no recourse, because nobody has ever had a day of trial in relation to any accusations put against them since 2004, since this was implemented.
So the police are judge, jury, executioner,
they are the
bailiff, everything.
But we have it two ways down here. We have the magistrates will act out as a family violence order, and the police will act at police family violence order. But it's very rare ever that the police go to the magistrates. Why would they? Because they already have this illegal power.
Yeah. That's an extraordinary situation. I mean, we see something like that, something approaching that situation in other states, particularly in Victoria, but this one in Tasmania seems to have broken the record for this type of behaviour. And is it fairly widespread?
Well, it is here. Prior to the gazetting of the Act, let's say the two and a half years prior to the gazetting, there was a reporting of 1,200 cases in Tasmania. Now, after the Act was implemented, the following 2.5 years, same period of time, there were 12,500 cases. So we had an epidemic of reports, I suppose, ensued, and trapping many innocent victims of false reporting. And we are now, I have the dubious distinction of being the suicide capital of Australia, Tasmania, which is something that we don't want.
Yeah, that's another issue. So 12,500, that's yeah, that's an extraordinary number. And is the community aware of this, or is it just sort of going on and people thinking, oh, it'll never happen to me?
I think the latter, what you said. Oftentimes people are one out when these things, so obviously you're very emotional when something happens to you and you feel very alone. And that's why we actually put a light at the end of the tunnel. We formed this organization so that we just didn't talk about the problem and fixing up in a Band-Aid way. We actually did something, or are in the process of doing something about the actual law itself by making the law null and void itself, because it is unconstitutional and it breaches many of our international treaties that Australia has, including the international rights for the child, the international human rights issues, a Sex Discrimination Act in Australia. And in particular, of course, it's very against the Australian Constitution, which, of course, is the ultimate law in this country. And this state is run rampant, and they think they can do what they want to do. Well, you know, we think they can't, and that's why we've put this $200 million writ against them to challenge them, that particular law itself. And we've hired we consider one of Australia's best constitutional lawyers, Dr. John Walsh of Brana. And of course, yesterday we had our first test in the federal court in Hobart.
Oh, and what happened there?
Well, what happened then was the usual. The Tasmanian government, what they try to do is to write it off as a joke, our application. And so we'll be doing on the 7th and 8th of June, we'll be back in court again. And the Tasmanian government will put in their affidavits against our original writ, and we will put our affidavits in against their reaction to our writ, and we'll go from there. And hopefully, because it is a federal court, and we hopefully there'll be a level playing field, that in fact the judge will say, will wipe out the Tasmanian government's attempt at smothering up this vital information, which is obviously vital to all the people in Tasmania, and there are repercussions, of course, all the way around at Australia. So, so we have to see where we go from there.
Well, it'd be a major achievement to turn back the tide if you were, you know, if you are able to prevail with this application. And have you considered any other action, like perhaps at the political level, as distinct from the legal level?
Well, we have gone through that process, and with a lot of the politicians, and their main reply is no reply. They're pretty happy with what they've got, and don't want to rock the boat, because a lot of them feel that the females will be really object about them changing parts of the Act, which are originally it's supposed to be neutral, but in fact it's not. It's 92% of all those in Tasmania are men who are actually getting these police family violence orders against them.
92%.
And the venom and the ferociousness and the vindictiveness of the police in this state is something to write about. They salivate like Pavlov dogs the side of their mouth every time they get somebody. We have a whole heap of recorded bashings and threats and everything in this state. It's gone beyond the pale, and this is our last opportunity to restore democracy in the state. And of course, all the other states have now come into it now, and they're looking very closely at what happened, because if we overturn this illegal law, which it is an illegal law, there's no question about it, that those illegal law will also go to the other states, and will have to crash all theirs as well, and think about a new Family Violence Act, and also about what they consider as definitions. We have all sorts of definitions down here which constitutes family violence, and which is, of course, is not violence. But our main problem is that people are being perjured against, and they have no reply at all in the courts, and they lose everything. And we're not, as I said, going to just stand by and let that occur. And that's why we're prosecuting the government against what they've done.
Yes, well, there's 12,000 people.
You know, oh, it's over 16,000 now.
16,000. So you've got those 16,000 directly affected. Then you've got, you know, other people that are affected indirectly.
Well, you have all the grandmothers and grandfathers who can't see their kids anymore. In my case, I haven't seen my sons for 3 years. I've lost my house. I've lost everything. And I'm a 64-year-old man, and I made the terrible error in marrying a girl from Thailand who was 30 years my junior. She saw the use-by date in my head after I'd just come home from a serious operation in the hospital, when she'd bashed one of my sons and bashed me up as well. And the next morning, when I was away at the doctor's, when I returned, the police were there and then threw me out of my house, and I've lost a whole lot, mate.
That's terrible. So if anyone should have notified the police, it would have been you, wouldn't it?
Well, the first one that should have gone with myself, but I like to, you know, think that everybody has moments in their family life where people do things which later on they might be sorry for. So I try to keep the family together.
Yes.
And I think a lot of people try and do that. They forgive the other person. Well, the point was that she had a different agenda than I had.
And would you have felt embarrassed to notify the police that you were suffering from domestic violence?
Well, yes, because, you know, I mean, the size of me, I'm a big fella, and my wife's a lot smaller, and of course they would have laughed at me, as usual they do with a lot of people and men, and not taking you seriously. I mean, I had a lot of information I gave later on, and but nevertheless, once the, as I say, the old bulldog bites down the neck with this police family violence order, there's no getting out of it. Even if your spouse or your ex or your partner decides that they don't want to carry on with it anymore, they still get you. Mm. They won't let you. They will not let you go. They have a pro-arrest policy in this state, and that's it. It's a pro-arrest, and people have no idea that, of the turmoil that's happening here. And I can guarantee that if they send this the same legislation to the states, it'll be in every lounge room and every house in Australia, and particularly because New South Wales being the largest state in terms of population, you'll have a tenfold increase in your reported violence cases as well.
Well, in New South Wales, there's an extraordinary provision which defines domestic violence in the legislation as being violence of a man towards a woman, which totally
really?
Ignores all the other types of violence, the women against men, men against children, women against children. It's quite an extraordinary definition in New South Wales. So that might be the first step towards something along the lines that you're fighting.
Well, what I found here was, what I found was disgusting, is that when Judy Jackson and the government at the time wanted to push this issue, in every hospital waiting room, there's signs always showing the women as a victim of this, right? And on television, they were showing the women as victims. Now, in New South Wales, I went drove through there last year through Armidale Way. I actually saw signs, government signs, like on the side of the road, reporting a family, reporting a domestic violence.
Yes.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
So, you know, really. You know, we're all just mystified of... we know the reasons. I think everybody actually knows the reasons what they're trying to manipulate a new society and based on a real feminist point of view. But, you know, we can argue about that later on. But at this point, the fact is that it's occurred. And what happened with our, you know, I think our soldiers in previous wars? I mean, if they could think now what this country turned into, I would be amazed that they wouldn't sort of stand up and have some sort of a rebellion.
Well, I think it's time that men did take stock of what's going on, and instead of, you know, always wanting to do the right thing by the fairer sex, I think it's just gone too far, and I think men now have to finally start looking after themselves a bit more and not going along with all the white ribbon campaigns and all the rest of it that seems to provoke a knee-jerk response from a lot of our politicians and a lot of men in the community. Men of, you know, I mean, you look at the example of female lib and feminists and the way they can band together and start campaigns. Men have not traditionally done that, but I think maybe now is the time. And I think your this move that you're doing is commendable.
Well, we understand, Bill, that we're the only organization in the Western world, or probably in the world, has ever taken on a government against the actual law, to have the actual law expunged as illegal in Latin terms, ultra vires, and not to be obeyed and not to be subdued by it. So we've had to go past the talking stage and actually do something now. Where it also hurts the government in the pocket if we're, you know, when we're successful with this as well, for recompense for all those people that have suffered. And we want to expunge every single charge against anybody who's ever been convicted under this act. In Risdon Prison, that's our main prison in Tasmania, over 50% of the inmates now are in there because they breached a family violence order.
Yeah.
Now, these men are braver than I am because they love their kids, and most of them, it's all about the kids. And they go and they breach the order because they're not allowed to be within 10 meters of the kids and stuff like that. And they know that they're innocent. They know that they didn't do anything. And yet they still have the courage to go and do it. And they're rotting in those cells now and sitting there in Risdon Prison when people like myself who are less brave to go and do that. I suppose I'm doing what I can do on the outside, but I really feel for those blokes.
That's an extraordinary situation, isn't it? It's just completely out of control. And I know... with the definitions of family violence, we talked about a few minutes ago, but it can include just about everything, can't it? I mean, you know, a sly look can be regarded as domestic violence.
Yes, well, we only in jail in Jersey Against Illegal Laws Incorporated, which I'm part of, we only acknowledge that the physical violence, and the physical violence must be reported within 24 hours.
Yeah.
That's it. Intimidation, looking at someone the wrong way, you know, petting the cat in the wrong way or whatever. We don't consider that as violence at all.
No. No, it's. I think that's right, and it's. It makes it easier for the legislators if they can just look if they focus on that violence, and there's enough of that. I mean, we've got a website. I don't know whether you've been to the website. 1 in 3. It's either numbers or words, and you can get the actual figures on domestic violence rather than the urban myths that seem to get propagated so often. Look, Ray, I wonder if you could stay on the line for a minute. We might just have a short musical break, and we'll come back just to a few other things I'd like to raise with you.
Yes, my pleasure, Bill. I'll wait.
Thanks very much, Ray.
Step you take, I'll be watching you.
They grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
What do you care? It's not like you were ever there anyway.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
And welcome back to Dads on the Air on this 13th day of April 2010. And we're speaking with Ray Escobar, who is the president of Juries Against Illegal Laws. And Ray, I wonder, for people who would like to help you in your work, is there a contact that they could use?
Yes, I think so, Bill. What we'll do is I'll give you my email, and we can go from there. It's all lowercase, of course, and R for Romeo, J for Juliet, E for Echo, S for Sierra, C for Charlie, O for October, B for Bravo, A for Alpha, R for Romeo, and the number 1 at bigpond.com.
Great.
I'm glad you asked that because we're getting responses from all over Australia, and we want to, people have asked us, can we start a branch up on the mainland, go national? And we said yes, but we'd like to have a minimum of 200 members from each state and before we set up our organization in those states.
Well, that's great. And also, for some of these men in distress, we have the body Dads in Distress. We've got Phil York here today from Dads in Distress. And Phil, perhaps could you just give some details for how they could contact your organisation?
Yeah, thanks, Bill. If anyone needs support, they can phone our crisis line 1300 853 437 and talk to an operator there.
Great. Yeah, Dads in Distress is a great organisation, and everyone should support it. We're a little bit different because we're actually an organisation that supports men and women. Basically, most of our members, of course, are men. But we're interested in actually changing the law so that we get rid of the cause and not have to deal with the effects of it.
Yep. Well, we've been speaking with Ray Escobar. Ray, thank you very much for coming on our show today. And look, we'll be watching with great interest the progress of your campaign. We wish you all the very best.
Well, thank you, Bill, and all the very best to you and your staff there and all the listeners.
Thanks very much, Ray.
Bye-bye.
Lost in the horror of Golden Street Hall.
Golden Street Hall, where love has to crawl. Down comes the gavel, the winner takes all. Golden Street Hall, my heart is appalled at the casual carnage behind every door.
Pillars of marble, wood panels, horsehair. A modern torture chamber disguised as a court, processing daily and an endless onslaught. The pain and dysfunction of lies and deceit, while lawyers circle round like spaniels on heat. Nobody knows how much.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
Welcome back to Dads on the Air this Tuesday, 13 April 2010. We've just been speaking with Ray Escobar, who is the president of the Association Juries Against Illegal Laws. I'll just give you their email address again. It's rjescobar1@bigpond.com. And we were talking then about the family violence, and one of the first issues there is the definition. But we have our next guest is on the line, and our next guest is Dr. John Walsh of Brenner. Dr. John, are you there?
Yes, I am, yes.
Look, thank you very much for joining us this morning. This is a very unusual, I think some might say unprecedented legal action against a government.
And, it is.
It's a fascinating approach. I was just wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about it and what your approach is going to be.
Well, the group approached me some time ago about concerns about the Family Violence Act in Tasmania, and on the face of it, everyone would say, yes, we're all opposed to family violence, let's do something about it. But when you read the Act, and also particularly when you talk to people who've been affected by it, it has changed the whole system of criminal justice in Tasmania. It has taken it away from the courts. It's taken away the presumption of innocence. It has allowed police to make orders without evidence, just based on suspicion and hearsay. And it has forced people out of their homes, it's disrupted families, and it has caused suicides, not just from fathers and from mothers, but from children who've been affected by it. So when the group approached me, they said, what can we do about it? And my thought was we could tinker at the edges and try and get some amendments. We could run individual cases, which would have the effect, perhaps, of clearing the reputation of the person affected, but it wouldn't affect anybody else. So my advice was that we really need to do it on a much bigger and, in fact, a national scale, and that is go through the federal court rather than the state courts, because it is contrary, in my mind, to the Family Law Act. It's contrary to the Constitution of Australia, and it's contrary to international treaties and agreements that the Commonwealth has entered into. So we took that approach, and we've started that in the federal court.
Yes, well, it seems a fairly basic tenet that something as important as your liberty should, that there should be some sort of court judgment before you're deprived of it, rather than the whim of the local police sergeant.
Yeah, well, look, I'll give you an example. I was in Launceston on Sunday talking to a group of people before the court action on Monday, and one of the members there came to me. He said, look, we're divorced, we're separated. I've got orders from the family court as to when I can see my children, and I went to see my daughter just recently. And when I got there, the police said to were waiting for me and said, you can't see your daughter. He said, I have a court order from the Family Court of Australia. And the police sergeant said to him, in Tasmania, the police supersede the courts. So what is the point of having courts and orders if the police can, with impunity, just ignore it? And they said to him, if you walk in to see your daughter, you will be arrested. You'll go to Risdon Prison and you'll stay in prison.
This is extraordinary, isn't it? I mean, yes, I mean, you are a constitutional expert.
I don't use the term expert. I use the term constitutional lawyer.
Constitutional lawyer.
We can't describe ourselves as experts because there's always someone who knows a little bit more than we do.
Okay, well, I'll put it that you have a higher level of expertise than the average person.
I'll concede to that.
But it just seems extraordinary that you've got a state government functionary making a pronouncement on the conflict of laws between federal and state laws.
Yes, That's why we've gone to the federal court, to a federal judge, and we're fighting it on federal issues.
And there's been one appearance in court already, hasn't there?
Yes, there has. There was an appearance yesterday, and we were expecting, of course, that the government barrister from the Director of Public Prosecution's office that they use over there would come along and put in a defence and say, look, we're defending this, and put up some sort of argument. They didn't put in a defence. What they said is they wanted to have the proceeding struck out.
Yeah.
A strikeout proceeding is one of these ones where there really is no evidence, there's no witnesses, and it's just an application to a single judge to say, look, we don't like this action, we don't think it's going to win, and we want you to strike it out before the case, you know, really gets underway and evidence is heard. This is a technique that is used, unfortunately, by governments. And not just the Tasmanian government, but state governments. I've struck it in New South Wales, I've struck it in other states, and even the Commonwealth does it. If they don't like the action, if they don't want it to be aired openly in an open court with witnesses and all the evidence, they move what's called a strikeout action and hope they get a judge who says, oh, yes, this is not going to go ahead, and that's the end of it.
And did the judge reserve his decision on that point?
No, what he did was he handed down procedural orders. He was very fair. I said in court that I was very disappointed that the state government would take that approach to try to bury it. But there was nothing I could do to stop it, and the judge said that there was nothing I could do to stop it, which is true. He handed down what's called procedural orders, and the orders are that they have to put in a submission in writing with some affidavits by a certain date. We then get an opportunity to respond to that, and then when that's over, we go back to court before the same judge in June. And then we will argue verbally in relation to the strikeout application, and he will then hand down his decision either on that day or a little later. It's going back to the federal court on Monday the 7th of June. It's booked in for 2 days, 7th and 8th of June in Hobart.
Well, it's going to be fascinating. Is there a risk of costs being awarded against you?
Oh, there's always a risk of cost with any litigation. This is always a problem for private persons, whether they're organisations or charities or whatever. One can always have costs awarded, and this, of course, is a weapon that the government can use very effectively. Any government, and I'm not singling out the Tasmanian government, any government, because they have unlimited resources.
That's right.
If costs of $1,000 or $100,000 or $1 million are awarded against a government, it means nothing. They just write out a cheque, and if they run short of money, they put the taxes up.
That's right.
Private people can't do that, and a lot of good private actions falter because people run out of money.
Yes, there's certainly it's a man against the machine or an ant against an elephant or something, isn't it?
And yes, I mean, you know, you find that you don't have to go far around the country to find people who have good, what we would call good causes of action that either can't get underway or have faltered somewhere along the way because the opponent, whether it's the government or a bank or, you know, someone who's got the resources, is fighting them. And look, I'm involved in another case where a government is involved, and they have been dragging this on for over 2 years before getting it to trial, because the government won't run out of money, but the clients could very well do so.
And what exactly are you seeking, Dr. Walsh? Are you looking for damages, or are you actually looking for something more than that?
Well, the primary thing that we've asked for, and this is the important part of the action, is to have the Family Violence Act in Tasmania repealed. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't want any controls on violence at all. We want that particular act repealed, and we want it replaced with something that is in accordance with the law. Part of the writ also asks for damages, and the damages are not to go to the organisation as such that's launched it, but to compensate in some way, in money terms, the families whose lives have been destroyed and homes have been lost over the 6 years that this act has been in force.
Mm.
The question of damages, of course, is up to the judge, but the primary thing is to get the act repealed, to stop it now.
And can the judge has that power to say that this is unconstitutional, and that would be...
Yes, he does. He's got the power to make a declaration that it is contrary to the Constitution, and it's contrary to the Family Law Act. It is our view quite clearly, and it's set out in the writ, that it is contrary to the Family Law Act, which is an act of the Commonwealth Parliament, and whether one likes the Family Law Act or not, the Family Violence Act would appear to be in conflict with it. Now, if that's the case, under the Constitution, the Commonwealth Act prevails.
Yes, so, yeah, that seems to... That's a good argument just on its own there. And
yes, and the judge does have that power, and he also has power to award damages, but the important thing is to get rid of the legislation.
Mm.
Look, it is so important. On Friday of last week, I was working in Melbourne on the papers for the hearing on Monday, and I'm going through the papers. I received a phone call to say that one of the members had just let us know that his young son, who'd been affected by the Family Violence Act, had committed suicide that morning. Mm. You know, that broke everybody up, that... But, you know, the government doesn't want to hear that. You know, Tasmania has now become, because of this act and what's happened under it, it's become the suicide capital of Australia, which, you know, I think is sad.
It's an unwanted mantle, isn't it?
Yes. Tasmania is such a beautiful place, but to have that legislation, I just think is appalling.
Mm. And that one you talked about, that was definitely linked to this legislation.
Oh, yes. Look, there is Ray Escobar, who's the president of the association, has got documentation that would fill a suitcase of cases of suicide and of mental breakdowns. All, you know, the effect on health and families, apart from the loss of homes and jobs, you know, is just horrendous.
Yeah, there's a general. There seems to be a general approach on suicides to brush it all under the carpet. I mean,
Dad's
on the air. We've been trying for years to get figures from the Child Support Agency about the number of suicides resulting from
suicide action. You know, one. You know, if someone's killed in a road accident, you know that if it's bad enough, makes the news. If someone's murdered, you know that makes the news. But if someone kills himself or herself, or if it's a young child who commits suicide, it's just buried.
Yeah. Well, also, I think because it's the male. I mean, there have been some terrible tragedies, but when there's a male involved, it gets on the front page. If it's a female, it seems to get buried somewhere inside the paper.
Yeah. Well, the Family Violence Act, of course, was suggested, promoted by what some people in Tasmania would describe as the feminist lobby. But I don't know, you know, the fact is they passed the legislation. It's not just men now who are affected by it, but there's I understand somewhere between 8 and 10% of the people who end up in prison as a result of this are female.
Yeah, it might be best to tap into them, you know, to get something done.
Yes. The way the act works is ridiculous. You know, if I'm walking down the street and someone bashes me, I go to a police station, I say I got bashed, and, you know, these are the injuries and so on, and the police make inquiries and they investigate. But with the Family Violence Act, all you need is for a spouse, a partner, whether it's male or female, to walk into a police station and say, "Oh, look, he or she looked at me savagely this morning. I feel under threat. He looks dangerous. I think something might happen." And the policeman can say, if he then forms a view that this may happen, he can then issue an order and take that person, whether it's male or female, out of the house for 12 months.
Mm. 12 months. Well, and I can see where this gets a life of its own, because if someone does come in and report that, the policeman does nothing, and then the next day there is an attack of some sort,
The policeman is then at fault, yep. to err on the side of caution. He does something, you know. You know, there have been some tragic cases over the years where, you know, people have reported actual violence, nothing has happened, and then there's been a tragedy, a murder, you know, subsequently. But they are really, really very, very few cases, and I just think this is a complete overreaction to it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would be like saying what we will do is stop all bank robberies by stopping all customers going into the banks.
Yes, well, that's, you know, one way of doing it, isn't it?
You know, I mean, it's over the top. It's over the top. I mean, our view is that if there is violence, it should be reported. The police should act, but there should be actual violence. There should be what we call evidence. And if someone makes a complaint, you need more than just a young police constable making a decision on the spot based on his views. You need someone to go to court, go before an independent magistrate, give evidence and be cross-examined, you know, if necessary, so a reasoned view can be formed.
Yes, I mean, that's why we have the courts there, to do something as serious as taking away your liberty. We're speaking with Dr. John Walsh of Brunei about the legislation in Tasmania. And Dr. Walsh, do you think there'll be any effect resulting from the change of, well, yes, not a change of government, nearly a change of government.
The non-change of government.
Yes,
it's interesting that it appears that Labor and Liberal, you know, seem to get the same number of seats, but Liberals got more votes and they feel that they should be the government, but they're not. There should be a change of thinking in the government.
Yeah, well, you'd like to think so. I mean, yes, it's you'd have to think it's going to be unstable, that sort of relationship. But
yes, I think it will be. Don't get involved in politics. I haven't for over 35 years. But it does look unstable. But one would hope that, given the voting patterns that occurred in Tasmania, that the government now would sit down and think, well, perhaps we're doing some things wrong, and this is one of the things they're doing wrong.
Mm. Do the other parties, do the Liberal Party or the Greens Party, are you aware whether they have any policy on this issue?
As I understand it, at the present time, they don't have a policy.
Mm.
Unfortunately, a lot of politicians' sole policy is what can I do to get votes?
Yes.
And, I think at times you've got to sit down and say, look, there's something more important than getting votes. It's doing the right thing.
Yes, well, you'd hope that if you do have some success in the courtroom, that someone will sort of think this is a good thing to get onto, and it might even lead to some votes. So,
yes. Yes, it could. You know, I think it should be solved, you know, legally, but it could be solved politically. The politician sitting there and saying, look, the people aren't completely happy with us, and there are some things we're doing wrong, and this is one of the things we're doing wrong. Let's get rid of it.
Mm. And Dr. Walsh, you actually practice in Melbourne, I take it, do you?
No, I live on Norfolk Island. It's just that when I'm working in Australia, I find it convenient to be based in Melbourne because I started in Melbourne. I'm a member of the Victorian Bar, and I just find Melbourne a more convenient place to start from. I mean, I could start from Sydney or Brisbane or Hobart, but I just find that if I go to another state, it's just more convenient to start off in Melbourne and come back here. We don't have that many flights from Norfolk Island, and I can never guarantee if I leave Norfolk Island that I'll be in a particular place the next day. No. Whereas in Melbourne, there's so many flights that I can always guarantee I can get there.
Well, look, that's a lovely retreat up there in Norfolk Island. So
yeah, it is.
Must be nice to go back to. Well, we've been speaking with Dr. John Walsh. Dr. Walsh, thank you very much for speaking to us today.
All right. Thank you for the opportunity.
We wish you all the very best in that campaign. We'll be watching.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks again.
Bye.
But hey, before you cut me down, just stop standing in my shoes, 'cause I don't have to hear one word of this. No, on any other day, I might care what you say, but every Saturday is Father's Day. And you might call it sad, you might call me mad, but I've got one who calls me Dad. And all the other blokes that live up know how to leave a man alone. They're not a bad old bunch that live up here. Ah, but you know that it's not family and it's not home. What of a darling wife that once I had? Well, I'm pleased to say that she still talks to me. But I try not to think of what went wrong, 'cause if I say that I was right, she might say that she was right, and the only rights I care about are visiting rights. On any other day, I might care what you say, but every Saturday is Father's Day. You might call it sad, you might call me mad, but I've got
Dad's on the Air this 13th day of April 2010. We've just been speaking with Ray Escobar and Dr. John Walsh of Brunnar. And, well, we've heard a lot of things over the years, but I find that situation in Tasmania absolutely extraordinary, with 52% of the people in Risdon Jail being there for alleged family issues. We just wonder where we're going with all this.
Yeah, that is madness. That's madness. 52% of people in jail over family issues. That's ridiculous. Yeah. The criminals in there must think it's hilarious. You know, what do you have to do to end up in jail? Get married and have kids, and you'll end up in jail in Tasmania.
Yeah, don't mind being in with a murderer, but I don't want anyone who's, you know, been doing some family stuff.
Yeah, exactly. We don't want someone who, you know, who hasn't paid his, you know, child support payments for 2 weeks or something. Not an unsavory character like that. Give me a rapist or a burglar, or, you know, a decent, honest criminal, at least.
Now, just talking more about the family violence, Men's Line Australia have recently been putting out some material relating to family violence. I mean, our first resort is the website 1 in 3, which you can write in either words or figures, and there you'll get the accurate statistics on domestic violence. But Men's Line Australia are looking at this issue, and they've got their definition of family violence. As I mentioned before, in New South Wales legislation, it's defined as man against woman. But going to more detail, the Men's Line Australia states that abuse does not have to be physical or sexual to be considered family violence. and they include things like slapping, hitting, spitting, scratching, other forms of physical assault, smashing things and destroying personal property, psychological abuse and mind games, such as spreading lies and setting up impossible damned if you do, damned if you don't situations.
Well, that is definitely not assault. Assault is a physical action. All that stuff, that clearly falls outside of any dictionary definition of what assault is all about. Violence.
Yes, I think they're probably going a bit far, and of course that's always very difficult to prove, although there's no doubt it goes on. They also include threatening, bullying, manipulative behaviour, including using threats of self-harm to control the other's behaviour, using access to children to punish, threaten or control. That's very widespread. Verbal abuse, such as name-calling, put-downs, taunts and mockery, financial and economic abuse, obviously sexual assault, and general other behaviour aimed at frightening, hurting, controlling or dominating the other. Now, they make the point that obviously men can experience family violence, and even though the men's relative physical strength means that they often inflict more serious damage with their strength, but I think that overlooks the use of all types of weapons.
Yeah, and sneakiness on behalf of women who basically sneak up behind you when you've got your back to them watching television or something and let you have it with the poker or the baseball bat or something, who knows?
Mm. Oh, scissors. I've heard of many cases where scissors are thrown. There are all sorts of whatever weapon is at hand, and I think that's why the murder rate is so high in America, because the weapon at hand is often a gun, which does more damage than a knife or some other implement. And looking at men versus women, of course, the harm caused by psychological and emotional abuse does not depend on the physical strength of the person. So that sort of might be why that the number of men affected by violence is larger than a lot of people in the community might believe. There is this lack of understanding of female-male violence, which has often meant that men who have reported their abuse have not received a satisfactory response. And we spoke earlier with Ray Escobar, who's the president of Juries Against Illegal Laws, and he mentioned his own experience. We'd like to think that is changing with a bit of better education for the police and others, and with, as I say, the websites such as 1 in 3, where the figures show that 1 in 3 of the domestic violence claims are actually women against men. So maybe with the more widespread understanding, that position may change. So just a note of caution here, if as a male you do feel you are at risk of injury from your partner, it is still better to call the police than retaliate physically, because apart from anything else, you risk committing an offence yourself. So you should report it, you should take down the names of the officers you deal with, and if you're not happy with your treatment, register a complaint with the officer's supervisor, and ultimately you can go to the police ombudsman. So just a couple of tips then. If you do find yourself in this situation, try and keep good records of everything that happened. This could be necessary if you decide later to take legal action, or if you're concerned about the police intervention. So keep a diary which records what happened, when, where, any supporting evidence, such as certainly as impartial witnesses. And you should plan ahead to stay safe. Plan circumstances on when you'll be leaving the family home. Will you take the children with you? Where will you go? What measures can you take? Who can you call if you need help? And perhaps a realisation that if you're in a violent relationship, there's no point in waiting around for years to hope that the partner will change. It is unlikely that there will be a change without some sort of professional assistance. There may be remorse after an incident, but that doesn't, and even a promise to change, but that's unlikely to ultimately resolve the situation. So men really need to start taking stock of this, and if you are looking for help, there is Men's Line Australia, and of course the Dads in Distress is another resort that men in this situation can take advantage of. And just bringing that into focus, we've mentioned on the show already that Dads in Distress were a finalist in the Tropfest Short Films Awards recently, and the Dads in Distress film showed some typical meetings and put together a film, which then went on to, as I say, to become a finalist. Phil, have you got anything to add on the making of that film?
Yeah, thanks, Bill. Yeah, as you said, it was produced by the Chief of Staff of Southern Cross 10. He himself and his crew actually drove up to suburbs of Sydney in Chester Hill every Wednesday from Canberra. So it's about a three-hour trip there and back every Wednesday night for 5 weeks. And sat in our meeting and took some footage and also spoke to the guys and, got all this footage together to make this short film.
So there were no actors. This was the real stuff.
Yeah, this was real stuff, mate. Nothing was pre-rehearsed. It was basically raw as raw can be. Basically, we ran the meeting and we acted as if the camera crew and sound crew weren't there. Mm. And they did their bit and we just did our meeting as normal. The way it was edited was very well done, obviously, to get the message across. The movie was called Every Second Weekend. And the response from the public has been wonderful. Mm. So being a finalist, we had screenings in each state of of Australia on the actual night of the release of Tropfest. We also had it was on Movie One, being shown over the pay TV network. The following weekend, there was a CD released in the Sun Herald papers throughout Australia, and on Easter Saturday, it was shown on Channel 9. So we've had a lot of coverage, and it's been great.
Yeah, I saw the Channel 9 show, and of course, Dads in Distress is such a good brand, and it's it. We can only hope that it gets a bit more acknowledgement in the community as we come up to next year's major fundraising, which will be the walk in the park again.
Yep.
So, look, that's
let's go to a song.
Let's go to a song.
I've been standing in the back of
welcome back to Dad's on the Air. We're just about running out of time, but I thought I'd mention an interview coming up. An author in America, Bill Eddy, is talking about personality disorders and how they drive family court cases. Perhaps the most prevalent personality disorder in family courts is borderline personality disorder, more commonly seen in women. But another one is narcissistic personality disorder, more often seen in men. These psychological personality disorders often lead to parental alienation, and we've had a show previously on the DSM in America, which is the Bible of psychological disorders, and the campaign to include parental alienation in the DSM, and it's gaining some momentum in the States, which will inevitably flow on to us in Australia, who, if it gets that sort of recognition, it'd be a major achievement to get that recognised.
Well, it will, but once they say they acknowledge that PAS does it, or parental alienation syndrome does actually exist, then they can start realising that it is actually a genuine form of child abuse and start doing something about it, include it there in all the lists of signs that things are wrong in family situations.
Yep, so that's one to look forward to. We'll be speaking to Bill Eddy, and I'm sure he'll have a lot to tell us about the parental alienation in general and some of the battles that are going on in the States, which, as I say, will inevitably flow through to Australia. The book title is Don't Alienate the Kids, Raising Resilient Children While Avoiding High-Conflict Divorce. So... anyway,
this is a good plan. That's a very good plan. So yeah, follow that plan through, you're doing well.
And you can get that, I imagine, through Amazon. Well, I think we've come to the end of another interesting show.
Scintillating program, Bill. Fabulous work.
So it's goodbye from Dad's on the Air for this 13th of April. And got Phil York from Dad's in Distress, Ian Purdy, ianpurdy.com, and me, Bill Cable. Now stay tuned, because the next man in is Country Bob with Country On.
We're Dad's on the Air.